After so many years of running from Saul, David begins to be despondent, I believe, in verse 1 of chapter 27. And he says, one day I'm going to die by the hand of Saul. There's no other alternative than to go down and escape into the land of the Philistines. When I do that, Saul will not be able to chase me. And at this point in his life, he's about 28 years old. He's leading a band of 600 men, and he becomes a professional mercenary, a paid soldier, he and his 600 men, for the Philistines, the traditional enemies of Israel. David arose and crossed over, he and his 600 men, and went to Achish, king of Gath. And he lived there with Achish, he and his men. Each man had his own house. David had his two wives with him. Saul finally got word that David had fled to Gath, and he searched for him no longer. David finally said to Achish in verse 5, if I have found favor in your sight, then give me one of the cities in the country that I may live there. Why should a servant like me live in the royal city with you? Scripture says that Achish gave him Ziklag that day, for Ziklag has belonged to the kings of Judah to this very day. Ziklag is on the Judah-Philistine border, just southeast of Gaza. And he lived there for 16 months, a year and 4 months. During these 16 months, David is actually an operative in the form of a counter-spy for the nation of Israel. He is promising the king of the Philistines one thing, and yet he's doing another thing. He is benefiting from the protection of the Philistines, while at the same time he is their enemy, although they do not know it. David and his men went up and raided the Geshurites and the Girzites and the Amalekites, for they were the inhabitants of the land from ancient times, as you come to Shur, even as far as the land of Egypt. So they're down around the wilderness area, and David attacked the land and did not let a man or woman live. He took the sheep, the cattle, the donkeys, the camels, the clothing, and he came back to Achish. David's military exploits are bloody. He and his 600 men are raiding all of the villages of the Geshurites, the Girzites, the Amalekites, down near the wilderness. And when he attacks the villages, he kills every living soul. And he comes back periodically and reports to his boss, King Achish. Verse 10, and Achish says to him, where have you made a raid today? In other words, where did you wage war today? And David lies and says, against the south land of Egypt and the south land of the Jerahmeelites and against the south land of the Kenites. These three nations are the traditional enemies of the Philistines. When Achish hears that David's military exploits have been against these enemies of his, he is pleased. But we know that David lies, and he has not attacked the enemies of the Philistines, but he has attacked the enemies of Judah. I believe even at this time, David is involved in situation ethics. He still has a great deal of maturing and spiritual growth to experience in his life. And verse 11 says, David did not leave a man or woman alive that might report back to Gath and tell Achish the truth. The old cliche that the pirates used, dead men tell no tales, was very appropriate in the life of David because that was his philosophy. Because David was afraid that if he left one alive, as verse 11 says, they would come back and say, so has David done, and so has all his practice been. All the time he's lived with us, all the time he's lived in the country of the Philistines, he's been attacking the enemies of the Philistines. But Achish never heard this side of the story because no one lived to tell it. Achish only heard what David wanted him to hear. He believed that because David had become an enemy of Israel, he would be his servant forever. Chapter 28 contains the fourth tragic sin in the life of Saul. The Philistines gathered their armies to do battle against the host of Israel, led by King Saul. Among the Philistine leaders going up to do battle against Saul was Achish. It is only natural that Achish should ask his mercenaries to go with him. And in verse 1, he said to David, David, you're going to go along, you and your men. David agrees and says, you know what I can do. You know that we are men of military prowess. And Achish says, very good. You are going to be my personal bodyguard for life. The scene begins with David and his mercenaries accompanying the Philistine armies as they wind their way through the countryside to encounter the armies of Saul on Mount Gilboa. Before proceeding with verse 3 and following in chapter 28, it is necessary for us to move ahead to chapter 29, verse 1, to pick up the narrative of the military activity that we just summarized as completed in verse 2, chapter 28. The Philistines gather together all their armies to Aphek, and the Israelites are camping by the spring, which is in Jezreel. Aphek is about 20 miles west of Shiloh, as we discovered before. And the swords of the Philistines were proceeding by hundreds and thousands, and David and his men were proceeding on in the rear with Achish, as we discovered back in chapter 28, verse 2. And they are moving towards Shunem, as recorded in chapter 28, verse 4. But as they're marching along their way, the commanders of the Philistines turn and see David and say, what are these Hebrews doing here? And Achish said, this is David. He's the servant of the king of Saul, and he's been with me all these days, or rather these years, and I haven't found any fault in him all the time that he's been with me since he deserted Saul to this very day. But the other Philistine commanders are angry with Achish, and they say, make him go back. We don't trust him. It may be that in the heat of the battle with the Israelites, his loyalties will switch, and he'll suddenly decide that he and his men want to fight for the Israelites, and they will become our adversaries right in our very midst. The other Philistine commanders remind Achish once more by saying in verse 5, isn't this the one that they sang about? Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000. So years later, this epic song, which was written by the women of Israel, is still remembered. Achish looks at David and says, David, you have been upright with me. Little does he know. And he said, as far as I know, your going out and your coming in have always been pleasing. But you are just not pleasing in the sight of the rest of these men. So go in peace. Don't displease the rest of these lords of the Philistines. And David, in innocence, looks at Achish and says, what have I done? What have you found wrong in me from the day I came before you to this very day that I can't go with you and fight against the enemies of my lord, the king? And Achish said, you're pleasing in my sight, David, like an angel of God. Nevertheless, these other commanders said, you cannot go. Now, arise early in the morning and take your servants. And as soon as you have arisen early in the morning and the daylight is here, you depart. So David arose early, he and his men, and they departed. And they returned back to the land of the Philistines. And the Philistines go up to Jezreel, where Saul has been waiting. This is a fortunate thing because David would not have been comfortable in a situation where he had to encounter his brothers, the Israelites, in a hand-to-hand combat situation. David returns to the land of the Philistines, and we can track the activities of the armies from this point. In chapter 29, verse 11, we read that the Philistines went up to Jezreel, and this is where Saul has been with the armies of Israel, as recorded in chapter 29, verse 1. When Saul sees the advancing Philistine armies, Saul moves his armies one more time over to Gilboa, as recorded in chapter 28, verse 4, because chapter 29 is a flashback prior to the movement recorded in chapter 28, verse 4. When the Philistine lords see Saul move from Jezreel to Gilboa, they go beyond Jezreel and camp in Shunem. Now from Mount Gilboa, Saul looks across and sees the camp of the Philistines as recorded in verse 5, chapter 28, and his heart trembles because there were so many of them. And he inquired of the Lord, but God did not answer him by dreams or by Urim, and we discussed that before, or by prophets. Saul simply did not have an answer from God. Saul then, in desperation, looks around to his servants and says, find me a woman who is a medium, that I may inquire of her. Saul does not care where he gets the answer from. He just wants an answer. He will not get an answer from God, from a medium, unless God desires him to have such an answer. His servants tell him that there is a woman who is a medium at Endor, and Saul disguises himself. From Gilboa, it's about a 10 to 15 mile journey over to Endor, and it's a secret journey that Saul makes disguised, and he comes to the woman by night and says, conjure up someone for me. Bring up for me someone that I shall name to you. And the woman, feigning innocence, says to him, don't you know that Saul says that it's illegal for mediums and spiritists to operate in the land? Are you trying to lay a trap for me? Is this entrapment? Are you trying to lay a snare for me to bring about my death? She believed that this man, disguised as he was, may have been a spy for King Saul in an attempt to find out if there were any existing mediums in the land. And if she revealed herself, she would be put to death. And Saul vowed to her by the Lord. He used the sacred name of God in his vow. And said, as the Lord lives, no punishment will come upon you. And the woman said, who do you want? And he said, bring up Samuel for me. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried out. And it seems to indicate here that even the woman was surprised when Samuel came forth. We know that Samuel was a man of God. He was a prophet, a judge, a priest. And at this period in time in Old Testament history, he would have been with Abraham across the great gulf from Hades, resting in Abraham's bosom, as Lazarus was later on. It would have been impossible for a medium or a servant of Satan to call up Samuel from the bliss of Abraham's bosom. However, God sends him with a message for Saul, and the woman sees him, and she sees him before Saul does. And when she actually sees Samuel and realizes that God must be involved in this, she sees through the disguise that Saul has on, and she says, why have you deceived me? You're Saul. And Saul said, don't be afraid. She must have been white as a sheet. And he says, what have you seen? And she says, I see a God, a divine being coming up out of the earth. And he said, what is this form? And she said, it's an old man. He's wrapped with a robe. And Saul knew it was Samuel, and he bowed his face to the ground. And Samuel says to Saul, why have you disturbed me by bringing me up? And Saul begins to cry out his heart to Samuel. And he said, I'm distressed. The Philistines are going to war against me. God's departed. He doesn't answer me anymore. Therefore, I've called you. What should I do? And Samuel said, why have you called me up? Or why do you ask me? Because the Lord has departed from you. God has become your enemy, your adversary. The Lord has done just as he said. The Lord has done just what he said he would do when I told you. He has torn the kingdom out of your hand. He's given it to your neighbor, as I prophesied earlier, to David. And you didn't obey him. You didn't execute his wrath on Amalek. So the Lord has done this thing to you. Samuel does give him a word from God. Because in verse 19 he said, God is going to give Israel along with you into the hands of the Philistines. And tomorrow you and your sons will be with me. Now, that does not necessarily mean the bliss of Abraham's bosom. What that means is death, Sheol, the grave. You'll be where I am. You'll be in the grave. And this encounter with the witch at Endor is Saul's fourth tragic sin. And in the book of Chronicles, it says that this is the reason God tore the kingdom from Saul. And Saul fell down flat on the ground. He was afraid. There was no strength in him. He hadn't eaten all day and all night. He had gone on this long journey from Mount Gilboa to meet the woman. And the woman saw that he was terrified. And she said, I've obeyed you. I've taken my life in my hands. I've done everything you've said. Now listen to me. I'm going to feed you. And he refused to eat. And his servants and the woman urged him. And he finally did eat. And he rose from the ground. He sat on the edge of the bed. He's a broken, devastated man. And the woman had a fattened calf, and she killed it and took flour and baked bread, and she brought it before Saul, and they ate. And like a convicted murderer on death row, this is Saul's last meal, because they will walk all night to return to the troops on Gilboa, and when dawn breaks the next day, they will encounter the Philistines in hand-to-hand combat, and Saul will meet his doom. It is now time to join David as he returns to the land of the Philistines, as the Philistines head toward Jezreel. The narrative begins in chapter 30, verse 1, as they came back to Ziklag, which is the city that was given to David and his men by Achish on the third day. Lo and behold, when they arrived, the city was smoking and burning because the Amalekites had raided the city while David and his soldiers were gone. This was retaliation by the Amalekites, because back in chapter 27, verse 8, remember, David had been raiding the Amalekite cities, and now they had raided David's city. They took captive the women and all who were in it, both small and great, but they did not kill anybody, and they carried them off and went their way, and I draw your attention to the fact that in this regard, they were more merciful than David. When David raided an Amalekite city, he killed men, women, and children, and left no one alive with the philosophy that dead men tell no tales. The Amalekites, on the other hand, raided David's city and spared everyone. And when David and his men came to the city, it was burned, and their wives and their sons and their daughters had been taken captive, and all the people and David lifted up their voices and wept, and David's two wives had been taken captive. And David was greatly distressed, because now, when they get back to the city, David's men turn against him, and they actually threaten to stone him, and the people are bitter. But David strengthened himself in the Lord his God. The Psalms tell of David's distress in times like this, but God was his refuge and strength. He knew that it was God's plan for him to sit on the throne of Israel. And he inquires of the Lord through the ephod that Abiathar had rescued from the slaughter at Nob by Doeg the Edomite. And he says, shall I pursue this band of men who have raided the city? God says, pursue, and you shall overtake them, and you shall rescue everyone. Don't you know David's heart was comforted when God said he would rescue everyone? His wives were among that group, and the wives of all his men. David took the 600 men, and he got in hot pursuit after the Amalekites, and about 200 of the men were tired, and maybe some old and some weak from the other battles. And he left them behind at the brook, and he takes 400 men and continues to pursue the Amalekites. And as they went on their way, they ran into an Egyptian, and they brought the Egyptian to David, and they fed him, and they gave him something to eat. And his spirit revived. It says he had not eaten bread or drank anything for 3 days and three nights. And David begins to question him. And he says, I'm a man of Egypt. I was a slave or servant of the Amalekites. And I got sick 3 days ago, and the Amalekites, my boss, just left me here in the field. And he says, I can remember that we made a raid on the south land. And down there in an area that belongs to Judah, and we made a raid down there in the south land of Caleb, and we burned Ziklag with fire. I can remember that. And David said, can you find where these men are? Will you take me to them? And he said, if you'll swear by your God that you won't kill me or that you won't give me back to my master, the Amalekite, then I'll take you. And the Egyptian leads them along because he knows where the Amalekites are going to camp. And they were spread all over the land, the Bible says, verse 16, eating and dancing and drinking and They were celebrating over the spoil that they had taken from the land of the Philistines and from the land of Judah. David slaughtered them from twilight until the evening, and not a man escaped. And David recovered all that the Amalekites had taken. He got his two wives back, and not a thing was missing. When David got back to the 200 men that were too tired to follow the other 400, they went out to meet David, and he approached them, and the people greeted them. But among the 400 men that went with David, there were some sons of Belial and worthless men who said, "Why should we divide with these people that stayed behind? They didn't help us. They were tired and lazy. They stayed back." David said, "Don't think like this. Don't do this, because the Lord has given us the battle. The Lord has protected us, and the Lord delivered into our hands everything that we lost." Verse 24 says, "As his part is that goeth down to the battle, so shall his part be that tarrieth by the stuff. They shall part alike." And it was so from that day forward that he made it a statute and an ordinance for Israel unto this day. This is a tremendous truth and a tremendous management philosophy that David developed following the defeat of the Amalekites. I believe it applies today to every branch of Christian work. The office worker who stays behind and handles the finances and the letters and the mailings of the missionaries overseas will share in the same blessing as the missionary. Remember when Saul was selected as king, he was selected from the smallest family of the smallest tribe. We discovered that this was a wise move politically. David is selected as king, but he comes from one of the larger tribes, the tribe of Judah. David was a master politician. And as a master politician, with an eye to the future, he began to endear himself to the heart of the people that dwelt in the south land of Israel. We read in chapter 30, verse 26, that after this victory against the Amalekites, when he got back to Ziklag, he sent some of the spoil that he captured from the Amalekites to the elders of Judah, to his friends, and he said, "Blessing on you, here's a gift from the spoil of the enemies of the Lord." He sent it to those who were in Bethel, to those who were in Ramoth of the south land, the Negev, and various other cities. And with this move, as a wise politician, David began to endear himself to the heart of the people. Verse 31 says he sent gifts to those who were in Hebron, and to all the places where David himself and his men used to go. These men in the cities would never forget the name of David. And very shortly, this wise political move will pay off. It is at this point that we leave our narrative of David and his exploits against the Amalekites as he revenged himself for burning his home city of Ziklag, and pick up once again the narrative of King Saul and his sons. The tragic end of an evil king is contained in chapter 31. We read that the Philistines were fighting against Israel, and the men of Israel fled and fell slain on Mount Gilboa. As Saul and his sons were running, the Philistines overtook them. They killed Jonathan and Jonathan's two brothers. The battle went heavily against Saul. Archers drew back their bows, and arrows hit Saul, and he was badly wounded by the archers. Saul turned to his armor-bearer and said, "Kill me. Pierce me through with your sword, because I don't want to fall into the hands of these uncircumcised Philistines." But his armor-bearer is afraid to kill him, and Saul took his sword, and as was a custom then and later on, even in the Middle Ages, put the hilt of his sword against the ground and fell on his sword. The armor-bearer saw that Saul was dead, and the armor-bearer fell on his sword and died as well. Verse 6 summarizes when it says, "Saul died with his three sons, his armor-bearer, and all his men on that day together." Dawn breaks the next morning, and the Philistine soldiers embark on a practice which was not only common during that day, but in World War II as well, the practice of stripping the bodies of the slain soldiers. In World War II, the Allies had to drive the Arabs away as they attempted to strip the bodies of the American and English soldiers of jewelry, gold fillings, boots, anything they could find. The Philistines go out to do the same thing. They take the swords and the jewelry from the fallen soldiers, and lo and behold, they discover that Saul and his three sons were on Mount Gilboa. This was a prize beyond their expectations. They cut Saul's head off, and they took his body, they stripped him of his weapons, and they took him back to the temple of Ashtaroth, and they nailed his body to the wall of Bethshan, which is over west of the Jordan by Gilboa. Can it be that we have a discrepancy here? 65 years earlier, following the Battle of Aphek, the Philistines placed the Ark of God in the temple of Dagon. We know that the Philistines worshiped the fish-headed god Dagon. But here, in 1 Samuel 31, it says that they put his weapons in the temple of Ashtaroth. 1 Chronicles 10:10 adds to the confusion when it says, "And they put his armor in the house of their gods and fastened his head in the temple of Dagon." Chronicles records the temple of Dagon. Samuel records the temple of Ashtaroth. Two different pagan worship systems. Is there an answer to this? There certainly is. Archaeology has discovered from the 11th century B.C. dual temples. The Philistines, who were worshippers of the fish-headed god Dagon, during their conquests and henotheistic practices, had adopted the worship of Ashtaroth as well. The Bible could not be more accurate in this matter. 1 Samuel 31:10 mentions the temple of Ashtaroth, 1 Chronicles 10:10 mentions the temple of Dagon, and not until the discovery of the archaeologists did we know that the Philistines worshipped both Dagon and Ashtaroth. When the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead heard what the Philistines had done, the valiant men of the city walked all night and at the risk of their own lives took the body of Saul and the bodies of his sons from the wall of Bethshan and came back to Jabesh and burned them there. Why would these inhabitants of Jabesh risk their lives to take the bodies of dead men from the wall? Simply this. Almost 40 years earlier, Saul's first military exploit was the rescue of the inhabitants of Jabesh-Gilead from the invasion of Nahash the Ammonite. This first military exploit was not soon forgotten, because 40 years later, these men risked their lives to remove the body of the man who had rescued their ancestors. This is the end of number 10.